A teenage girl stands beside a filthy car, every instinct screaming danger, yet she climbs in anyway. Why? Because saying no would be rude. This is the paradox that Karen Kilgariff and Georgia Hardstark dissect in their Cultural Phenomenon, a book born from a podcast that transformed true crime from morbid curiosity into feminist survival guide. Since launching My Favorite Murder in 2016, they've built a community of murderinos who understand that studying horror isn't about glorifying violence, it's about refusing to be its next chapter. Their manifesto challenges everything women are taught. Be nice, don't make scenes, trust your gut, but not enough to offend anyone. What emerges is something rare in self-help, actual help, delivered with the irreverent wisdom of two women who've survived their own disasters and decided to map the wreckage for others. The feeling, that sickening regret after someone violates your boundaries and you were too polite to stop them, doesn't happen by accident. Women are systematically trained to prioritize others' comfort over their own safety, creating perfect conditions for predators. At 16, Georgia agreed to model for a cafe customer's photography business. Despite alarm bells, his filthy car, the isolated location, no cell service, she couldn't be rude by backing out. When Lawrence commanded she remove her top on that isolated mountain, her feminist courage evaporated. She complied, choosing fear of his anger over her dignity. Years later, therapy revealed the truth. She'd been victim-blaming her teenage self for a grown man's predatory calculation. Karen learned different lessons from her mother, Patricia, a psychiatric nurse who mastered authentic connection without wasting energy on empty pleasantries. When Alzheimer's slowly erased her over 12 years, the cruelest part was the in-between. During one visit, Mom briefly came back, grabbing Karen's sister's arm to whisper, "You do know how much I loved both of you, don't you?" The distinction matters. Politeness is fancy curtains anyone can hang. Kindness is the home-cooked meal. The revolutionary act isn't random rudeness. It's naming inappropriate behavior directly. When some guy approaches asking invasive questions, you can say, "This is weird behavior. I don't know you. You seem like a predator. Goodbye." If he calls you a bitch, that confirms you were right. True self-care isn't kale or spinning. It's conscious communication with people who actually know you. Karen learned through therapy to stop venting to random coworkers and rely on her clutch five close friends. She warns against constant complaining. The shortcut to human connection is meeting on the common ground of hating a third person, but it leaves a fart fog of shittiness. "You're in a cult, call your dad," became their rallying cry. Everyone needs people who'll call them on their bullshit. In LA, Karen grew fascinated by Scientology's predatory tactics targeting wounded dreamers. Through therapy, she embraced the inner circle concept. Maintain five true friends who know you deeply, rather than seeking shallow popularity. Cults isolate people because we're less likely to accept nonsense when surrounded by those who genuinely care. Karen details her own cult experiences, particularly the cult of booze, drinking eight or more drinks nightly until seizures landed her in the hospital. A drunk brain can't record life's magical moments. Growing up in the 80s supermodel era meant impossible beauty standards and cataloging every perceived flaw. Her breakthrough came when Sandra Bullock's husband cheated, proved that even perfect people get their hearts broken. At 13, Georgia navigated an awkward phase and kleptomania simultaneously. After getting caught stealing, she called her lenient divorced father over her strict mother, though seeing him cry from disappointment was its own punishment. He bailed her out and had the charges dismissed, citing behavioral issues from depression and anxiety. Throughout her teens and beyond, he remained her safety net, always expressing pride regardless of mistakes. Karen's catchphrase, "send him back," originated from realizing many serial killers suffered childhood head trauma. Georgia traces her fear addiction to age 10 and Stephen King novels. The 1993 murder of Polly Klass, a girl her age, confirmed no one was truly safe. Meeting Karen at a 2015 Halloween party, Georgia was drawn to her detailed car accident description. After bonding over true crime at lunch, Georgia impulsively suggested a podcast. My Favorite Murder launched January 2016 and quickly exploded. Karen positions herself as an expert on self-destructive behavior through extensive field testing over roughly a 35-year period. She admits drowning vulnerability in nervous chatter, crowded bars, and Long Island iced teas didn't serve her well. Rather than dwelling in regret, she offers her life of don'ts as guidance. Remember, you can't have fun in a blackout because fun requires experiencing it. In 1996, 6 months into taking speed, Karen skipped rehearsal for a sitcom she'd been cast in because she was paranoid. Prescription diet pills were controlling her mind. She got fired, destroying the very career opportunity she'd started taking speed to achieve. Georgia shares her therapy breakthroughs, including realizing diagnoses can be both disaster and relief. Her mental health cocktail includes 1 ounce generalized anxiety disorder, 12 ounces depression, 2 tablespoons ADHD, a pinch of OCD, all garnished with abandonment issues. Identifying what's wrong helps you work toward relief. Her therapist helped her realize she needed kindness toward her younger self. Georgia recognized she calls herself a stupid fucking idiot for simple mistakes. Her therapist stated, "Georgia, you worship at the altar of doubt, capturing how doubt feels safer than faith." Georgia's teenage rebellion was rooted in self-loathing. "Deep down, I didn't think I deserved a normal, happy life." Her transformation began when her 8th grade English teacher gave her Ray Bradbury's The Martian Chronicles. At 16, Georgia drove alone to UCLA to hear Bradbury speak. After lying her way into the auditorium, she gave him a heartfelt letter. 2 weeks later, she received Zen in the Art of Writing, inscribed Onward, validation that the sweet baby angel inside her deserved to believe her life could be more. Self-sufficiency is fundamental self-defense. Karen warns against taking career advice from those who never pursued their own dreams. People who never pursued their dreams will project their regrets onto you. Despite her father suggesting she quit after 6 broke years in LA, Karen persisted. Shortly after, her friend Jay helped her land her first writing job. Her worst job, folding clothes at the Gap, fueled her fear of being stuck forever, propelling her toward stand-up comedy. Georgia got her first job at 15 for pure freedom. Money meant making her own choices. Her last pre-entertainment job was receptionist at a multi-billion dollar corporation, taking hangover naps under her desk. When she and a friend posted the McNuggetini cocktail on YouTube, it exploded. 9 years later, she's made ends meet doing what she loves, a food show, drunk history, and a murder podcast that's made her life blossom like a goddamn field of wildflowers. Georgia warns against projecting fantasies onto quiet people. What she mistook for depth in Aiden was actually him hiding a girlfriend. She advises, "The people who are open with their cards, those are the people worth playing cards with." After Aiden ghosted her, she bought herself 2 heart tattoos and a vintage Vespa, regaining independence, exploring Los Angeles on Sunday mornings. Karen recounts a typical latchkey kid afternoon in the 1970s-80s. After-school snacks, sibling battles over the lazy boy, and a stranger at the door. Her sister cleverly lies that their dad will return soon. After he leaves, they hide together, fear dissolving into hysterical laughter when her sister farts. These moments taught children to handle adult situations prematurely, shaping Karen and Georgia's understanding of danger that would later inform their true crime storytelling. The latchkey generation learned that adults weren't always available, and danger could arrive unexpectedly. Being forced to navigate threats without guidance created women who understood instinctively that politeness could be deadly, that trusting your gut mattered more than social niceties, and that survival sometimes meant breaking the good girl rules. These weren't abstract lessons. They were visceral truths carved into consciousness during vulnerable hours when children became their own first responders against whatever darkness waited on the other side of the door. In a world demanding women be smaller and quieter, Karen and Georgia offer revolutionary permission, be gloriously, messily human while fighting to stay alive. Their success stems from vulnerability, sharing mistakes, mental health struggles, and healing journeys. Georgia reflects on My Favorite Murder's impact with speechless gratitude, knowing what truly matters isn't chart rankings, but inspiring criminal justice careers and creating what fans call a feminist movement. Murderinos donate to causes like End the Backlog, form deep friendships, and help Karen and Georgia evolve their language to honor victims' humanity. Together, they've created a vulnerable, judgment-free space, an imperfectly perfect legacy, bigger than themselves. Remember Georgia's terror when Brother Asher disappeared in the forest? Years later, he revealed their dad was sobbing and praying, certain she was dead. That's the devastating impact your death would have on those who love you. Your life matters to everyone who would be destroyed losing you. So stay sexy, fuck politeness when endangered, and don't get murdered. Someone out there is counting on you to keep showing up, messy, imperfect, and beautifully, defiantly alive.